Now we go into 2024.
Sure.
Right. What are some of the top priorities for your organization, or that you see that labor should be involved in this year?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, who's in office really does matter for for workers. And so I think that, you know, workers have to be attentive to the political situation and the electoral situation. But I think more than that, I think that we have to ride those waves of victory. That when there is a culture of organizing, you start going out and you have those conversations and you try to identify kind of fertile ground for organizing industries. You start identifying that. So you start talking to workers and having those conversations about what does it mean for you to be in a union? What does it mean for you to have those rights and that voice? And I think that ultimately is always the work. That's going to be the work in 2024, in 2025, in 2026. I don't know that there's any specific work that labor has to do this year. I'm not huge on electoralism. Like, I don't think that that's where we have our power. I think our power comes from people and workers and solidarity. But I do think that we have to be attentive, especially you know, in this rising wave of fascism. It's disgusting. It doesn't want anybody on the left. It doesn't want anybody who's got a union. It doesn't want anybody. It wants mindless drones, obedient servants. They would pay us nothing if they could. We would go back to, you know, chattel slavery forever. You know, for everybody except for the billionaires. If they could have their way. And so the more and more that we get our power and we fight and we learn how to lobby and we learn how to, you know, like, pass the PRO Act. But we have to, like, identify the goal.
But that was one of the issues that didn't happen.
Well, that's exactly right. So we, you know, one of
PRO Act.
Right. The PRO Act, like with anything, you have to organize around it. The PRO Act is the Protect the Right to Organize Act. Right. And what that does is that really reinforces a lot of more. It's really on the side of workers. Give them the right to organize, to not face captive audience meetings,
right.
You know, stringent standards for enforcement of labor law. You know, repealing the Taft-Hartley would also be great. You know, like, all of these sorts of kind of legislative aspects of things help out. But you don't get there by just talking a lot about it. You get there by having a plan, knowing your strategy, knowing your tactics, and, you know, and keeping that as your singular focus.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there are so many things, like you said, that are going on in terms of the green economy, the cannabis economy. You know, New York State's got this this whole problem with the tier system that's in the state system, you know, that everyone's trying to fix. And so, you know, how do you keep that pressure on? How do you move people to pass legislation? But I think the more basic power is always the more basic question is, how do you get power?
Yeah, I'm gonna come back and ask you just a few more questions, but
sure.
I want to get into some of the social questions.
Okay.
Right. And one, as we know, over the last year, there was America's is involved in another kind of skirmish or war, whatever.
Multiple, yeah,
right.
Multiple wars,
and,
yeah.
Labor, it was one war, the war between Palestine and Israel, you know,
mm-hmm.
Labor say anything for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And over the past few months, labor has came out calling for a ceasefire.
Correct, yeah.
Wow. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, war is always a labor issue, and anybody who's paying attention knows that the labor temple, the labor headquarters that they had in Palestine was bombed in a specific Israeli airstrike in 2008. You know, labor was specifically under attack by Israel, Palestinian labor, you know, and in terms of what our role is our role is not to ignore that, but to say, why do we think that Israel would specifically airstrike the labor headquarters? That's a first and foremost question, I think. And then, you know, kind of ask the implied questions thereafter. So the labor movement is full of people of goodwill, is full of people who care about justice, is full of people who want to see a difference being made in the world. Obviously the situation that happened on October 7th wasn't the first situation, but it became a flashpoint. And the amount of retaliation, which workers know all about retaliation. Workers know all about collective punishment. We know all about how the boss is going to try to change the narrative. We know all about everything that workers who were paying attention saw happening in Gaza is the same thing that workers experience on the workroom floor because of, again, power, the relationship there. And so I think there was a huge movement within the labor infrastructure to say, wow, this is ridiculous. This is what we face on a daily basis. Now they just have guns, you know, and bombs and military forces, but they're enforcing the same kind of rules that my boss would face against me. You know, it's really disappointing that the larger labor movement was so quiet for so long. Now, obviously, after time and organizing and protests and really going against, so the AFL-CIO has, you know, kind of this, you know, only the national AFL-CIO can talk about national or international things. And so there's this movement to sort of silence dissent or other opinions lower. Well, the AFL-CIO hadn't taken a stance, so any stance taken wasn't in conflict with the stance. It was just that the AFL-CIO hadn't taken a stance yet. And after pressure and workers building worker power, the AFL-CIO, I think, was forced to move. I don't think that was their choice. I don't think they were excited about it because of their connection with certain political infrastructure.
Yeah, there was labor groups and also central labor councils across the country that was passing resolutions.
Absolutely.
You know, even though the AFL-CIO didn't give them authority, but they did it anyway.
They did it anyway, and that's what the labor movement is built on. They did it anyway, right? Like, that phrase could talk all about, as a postal worker, the Great Postal Strike in 1970. We just passed our 54th anniversary on that one, and they did it anyway. It was illegal. It was not legal to strike against the federal government, but these folks said enough is enough. We can't even survive anymore. We're living out of our cars. We're in breadlines. We qualify for welfare, and we're federal employees. And so when it came down to it, they said, we're going on strike. And they said, you can't go on strike. That's illegal. And they did it anyway.